Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Sheldon Primus. Welcome to the Safety Consultant Show with Sheldon Primus, where we blend safety smarts with business brilliance and a pinch of Sheldon's signature wit. Whether you're a safety pro, a fresh-faced consultant, or just safety curious, get ready for a show that'll educate, entertain, and elevate your safety game. Let's dive into the art of consulting with your safety sherpa himself, Sheldon Primus.
This episode is powered by Safety FM.
Yes, it is powered by Safety FM. It's powered by some coffee. It's powered by all kinds of stuff this morning. I welcome all you guys for coming in listening to me. This is the Safety Consultant Show, the show where I teach you a little bit about safety consulting, teach you a lot about safety as a whole. We talk about the business of being a safety consultant, we talk about OSHA compliance, and we even have some amazing guests that stop by and say hi to me from time to time. This week is one of those amazing weeks that we've got Dr. Jay Allen on the show again, the author of the trilogy, the Signal Transmission Trilogy. Dr. Jay Allen, my buddy, my friend, my man, how are you doing? How is life going?
Things are well, but I was, when you started saying amazing guests, I started looking around trying to figure out who the hell you were talking about because I had no clue at first. And then you said my name, so I was totally confused. How are things with you?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
It's been forever. I always feel like when we get together, we kind of pick up where we left off, and it's, even though it's been months, it's like I always like, you know, getting back with you because it's always such a great conversation being able to hear what you're doing, what's going on with the kids, what's going on with life. It's just always fantastic to hear your voice.
Everybody needs a friend like that, right? Where no matter how long time elapsed between the last conversation, you could be relaxed, you could breathe, you could just be yourself. And I'm so grateful that you're that for me, man.
Well, it's kind of like how did that song used to go? Ebony and Ivory, you know, in perfect harmony. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, you have to really be old to get that reference. But
I was about to say, you're showing your age. Well, Sir Paul McCartney's still at it too, man.
Right.
Have you ever heard the Texas group Krubin, I think it is, or Krubin?
Oh, I always hate when people put me on the spot about music like that because I always go no, and then all of a sudden I'll hear something later and they go, oh yeah, I did know that. But off the top of my head, no, it does not sound familiar.
Well, they're a Texas trio that actually have a song with their instrumental usually, but they have a song with Sir Paul McCartney. I mean, literally the man is... what, in his 80s, and he's still out there being relevant now?
Yeah, I mean, he's still a great artist till this point. Talking about great artists, I don't want to start with a downer, but did you read the news this morning about Robert Redford? I was so heartbroken when I read that. I was like, God, he's such a great actor. The only thing that I can compare him to for people that would know now generation stuff is that he was the Brad Pitt of his time. I mean, even though most people would say that Brad Pitt is the Robert Redford of his time, but he was such a great actor, being able to do such things, and it was so bad to hear that he passed away this morning.
Is it bad of me that says first he's still alive, and then after I was like, oh, and then I remember all the movies flashing by me, so I don't know if that was bad.
Right. I mean, I'll put it to you this way: a lot of people that know about me know that I do not love baseball. But I watched The Natural with Robert Redford many, 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 many moons ago. And I actually liked that movie. And I don't like baseball, but I was just one of those things that he's just such a good actor that he can make you believe anything that's going on in front of him on how well he's able to pull things off.
Oh, absolutely. So. And honestly, a lot of people, I guess, listening to the show might remember him in that movie where there was a news broadcasting, like where basically he was, I think he was in charge of the broadcast station there. And I don't even remember what it was, the name actually, but I know they had like a star-studded cast that did that one.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about, but of course, names are always going to pass me by in regards to when somebody puts me on the spot. But the great thing is that we have computers that are available, so I'm sure that at some point I'll look at it and go, oh, yeah, that's it. So we'll figure it out.
I would check, but I've got the world's loudest keyboard, and only you will be able to hear it.
Okay, let's see. Of course, it's not going to give me any kind of order, rhyme, or reason, but I'll figure it out at some point and then say something. That way it doesn't sound like we don't know what the hell we're talking about, even though we really don't. But it's okay. I mean, as long as nobody else knows.
That's right. And for some of you that are not familiar with Dr. J. Allen, just type in safetyfm.com. You'll be able to hear a lot about or see a lot about him. And when you do go on the station, you're going to hear some talking. It's not just noise in your head. They have a player that goes off automatically. So scroll down real quick and you'll be able to hear it. Just
yeah.
I play that for my students, and I always have to warn them as soon as I log in. I said, all right, you guys are going to hear something. That's not me, and you're not going crazy.
Yeah, it's one of those things that some people like, some people don't like, but I just think it's so much easier to know what we are about the moment you get there opposed to trying to read through all those pages. But some web browsers will block it the moment that it comes on, but it's good. I mean, what we've always tried to do is bring a group of different points of views related to safety, and that's the whole reason why we even started Safety FM. At this point, God, what are we looking at? We're looking at 7 years ago, so that was the whole thing for it.
Was it really?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Man, 7 years. I remember when you found me, I actually didn't even have the podcast fully out yet. I had those episodes that I was starting to create, and now I'm in my fifth year. But you know, honestly, as we started talking and everything else, I needed to get like I think 4 more episodes to make the 10, so I could give you something to release.
No, I remember contacting you because there was something that I had seen. I want to say it was on Facebook, and apparently your ads were working fantastically in regards to that. And it was amazing because I was looking at your consulting stuff. I will tell you, at that particular point in time, I had already spent quite a bit of money in regards of looking at different consulting courses, but yours took the dive into stuff related to safety. And I was only seeing like the preview stuff. I wasn't even like seeing the full course yet. And I was just amazed on how well it was put together in regards of the content that you had on there. And I was like, if this guy wants to start a podcast, we really need to talk. And I was sure that the moment that I reached out to you, you were like, this dude is nuts. Why in the heck did he reach out to me? And if I remember correctly, it was like a 2-hour conversation because we spoke for quite some time in regards to this. And I was like, I have some ideas, and look at us now. So.
I know, that's awesome. And then back then you told me to read Thomas Campbell, My Big Toe. I know. That was like one of the first things you told me to read. To this day, I have it on audiobook, and I've been reading it in drips and drab because I read it or listen to it, and then I'm like, ooh, that's good. And then I have to like really let it ruminate, and then I'm thinking about it even more, and I'm like, hold on. So those of you that don't know My Big Toe Theory of Everything, tell the audience about that and how that relates to your signal transmission trilogy.
Well, I have to say I discovered a book a long time ago by a astrophysicist, a NASA astrophysicist, if I'm on that, is he wrote a book about his theories of the world on how things tie together. And I looked at it and it really took some dives into some things related to systems and how people could tie pretty much anything together related to, we can talk about religion if you wanted to. You could talk about how the space continuum goes in. And I looked at the information and I was like, I'm not sure what kind of rabbit hole I had just gotten into, but it definitely, at first when I was listening to him, I was like, this reads like a textbook, and I'm kind of a nerd. So I was like, I'm interested in what he has to say. and I read the whole book, and I didn't know what to do. I was kind of confused at the moment because I was like, there's a lot of stuff that makes a lot of sense to me that's in this book. And then there was a lot of stuff that I'm like, I'm not even sure what half of this means. And so what did I do? I went back and started reading it again to go, what did I miss? So that's how that journey with that book. And luckily, I have been blessed enough to being able to meet Thomas Campbell in person. So it was very interesting going to one of his workshops and kind of hearing him lay out the lay of the land. I always tell people I don't like to ruin books for people, but it's one of those things that once you read it, it's either the right time or it's the wrong time. But the book will take you places that you probably didn't expect to go.
Absolutely. And I see with your book how, you know, with Philip K. Dick and a few other physicists and people who are in that realm, how you've taken that knowledge that you learned and you put it into the transmission books. And how I have been just myself transformed is I've actually been thinking about this type of stuff for a while because I've been,
That was my end. Sorry about that.
But I actually just with Deepak Chopra for many, many years, just learning a lot about his stuff, reading his books as well. And so I've already was open to that thought of truly our world as we see it could be more of a construct of reality than reality itself. And if you open your mind to what reality could be, even going into Deepak's book, talking about your gut, he has got a book about gut health and the microbiomes that's in the gut, that they're in their own universe. And I'm just, when I really started seeing how you're, the way that you've used the three and the way you understand it to kind of shed a light on the construct of not only organizations, but then the safety as a whole into what we all are living under when we're thinking about our safety systems and our safety management systems and the norms and the cultures that go behind keeping workers in line, if you would. That, to me, is the construct, if you would, of safety that you've the signal that's being sent from that construct. And if you don't mind, tell us a little bit of how you've just truly, I don't know, I don't want to be hyperbolic and I'm really trying to be measured in the way I'm saying this, but you blew my mind, young man. Mm-hmm. It was awesome. And I really, really, really just, it's changed my way of thinking.
Well, so I appreciate you saying that. I have to tell you, I've always had this bad habit or good habit, depending on how you want to look at it, that I like to do a lot of research and stuff. So if I start taking a dive into something, I will spend as much time as possible trying to research whatever material it is. And it's kind of funny because I think about older movies like Osmosis Jones, which is an animation movie. And it was like, hey, there is a world within the world and they're telling you about somebody's body, which you kind of think about and go, oh, that's different. And then I think about stuff like Men in Black. And if you think about Men in Black, when you get to the end, I think of the first one, if I remember correctly, they're kind of telling you that you're inside of a marble, which I thought was kind of an interesting aspect. And I was like, oh, this is different. But, you know, I won't say that I took big dives into it, but there were things that I was thinking about when I was putting some of these books together. And Todd Conklin, for a long period of time, told me, you need to write a book. And I kept on looking at it and going, listen, people have written about every single thing that you can imagine inside of the safety world here. And I was like, I have this different premise, but I'm not sure on how well this is going to relate to other people. And things that drive me crazy inside of the workplace is systems. It's we always consistently, regardless of knowing of the good, the bad, and the ugly, we always will do what the system tells us to do. And I looked at it and I kept on thinking about this and going, okay, if I know I am going to report something and it is going to change the outcome inside of my organization, I will be hesitant about reporting it, especially if there is a bonus program that is tied into it.
Yeah.
And that was kind of some of the mindset that I wanted to go into. Now, I will tell you that when I wrote the first book, Safety in My Opinion, I had no intention of writing a second book or even a third book. But when I put the pen down, or really the keyboard, I looked at it from the standpoint and going, there's more to say. Now, my wife told me immediately that it sounded like I was extremely pissed off when I started writing Safety Mutation. But I was like, I wasn't upset. It was the things that were angering me about what is going on within our workplace. And sometimes, going back to what I was saying originally, we're paid to be quiet. We're paid to agree with what's going on. And listen, I know sometimes this is extremely difficult to make those decisions. And I'm not saying it's the right thing or it's the wrong thing, but think about it. We're giving these things to people inside of the workplace that we go, you can feed your family and adjust to how our system is, or there is a potential that you can lose your employment and not be able to feed your family. And it's a difficult thing to decide, because what are you going to do? And I've noticed when I start talking to people that the older demographic tells me, particular, I was speaking yesterday to a 60-year-old lady, and she was telling me there's not a lot of 60-year-olds out there that are being hired. And your book has made me question some of the things, am I doing them right or doing them wrong? And I never wrote them for them to be a right or wrong thing. It was just a thought for you to look at the world differently. So that was kind of the concept of how it started. So this is where we're at now. And now we're three books in, and I keep on going, I don't think there's a fourth, but I've already been kind of, I've had a couple of people reach out and go, is there a fourth book? Is there a fourth book? And I'm just like, I don't really know what else to say.
Well, I think you're, the journey that you brought us through from, you know, in the very beginning book, when you're giving us your story and how it relates, Melissa's story, you're talking to us about the illusion, if you would, of people thinking that they're being safe and controlling risk, but honestly, they're just trying to not make waves and follow the perfect system that was designed previous to them even being there. And they're told that you do these JSAs and you follow this JSA exactly the way it is, you're going to be safe. And if you don't, I'm writing you up. And that whole mess, I was about to say a word.
It's your show. You can say whatever you want. I'm always hesitant when I'm on somebody else's show.
Oh, well, you know, I let all my guests know, you say whatever you want, just talk normal. And I'm always the one censoring myself, but you know, just that whole mess. And I'm teaching students after students after students. I'm teaching almost just over 200 students a year, and I'm teaching them a system. And your book challenged me as to I never taught any of them, you know, that the construct of safety is going to keep you safe. I just tell them you have to adjust to and risk changes, because you have the human element, you have conditions that change. And I always have my mantra that I've heard you say, you know, why did someone do what they did at the time they did it for the reason they did it? And you don't have systems that flex and bend like that. It's just, this person broke my rule without getting true context, and I'm going to write you up. Kind of like Sam's character, Daryl, you know? Yeah, Sam Goodman, if you guys haven't heard, he's a hop nerd, and he's got a character, Daryl, the safety man, and he just does this animation of a character that is over the top, but it's based on reality.
Hold on. Are you telling me Daryl's not real? I thought Daryl was real. What are you talking about? What do you mean Sam Goodman has a character? It's a guy that Sam Goodman hangs out with. What are you talking about here?
That's true. I can't blow it, right?
I'm not even
gonna say anything about Easter.
I've seen them at the same time, so there's no way that it's the same person. At least on video, I've seen them at the same time.
That's right. So that's the for those of you that are listening, then you don't really know the construct of safety that we talk about in the book, and Jay goes into really good details and stories and everything else. That's what we're talking about. And to me, it was just frustrating, and it's still frustrating, that we not only rely on these numbers, but we're safety officers are going to get fired if they don't follow these things line by line. Is that what you're saying, too?
Well, I mean, that's how it comes across. And here's the thing. I don't think that workers, employees, team members make bad decisions on purpose. they make the best decision by what is presented in front of them. And I think that that's what we tend to forget from time to time. People look at it and go, hey, listen, if I knew that I was going to do steps 1 through 4, and once I got to step 5, something was going to go catastrophically wrong, guess what's going to happen? I'm going to stop at step 4. There's just nobody that's going to go to step 5 and say, oh, this sounds like a great idea to do. But for some reason, we have this blame and punishment game that we like to play from time to time, that we believe that they did it on purpose. That's not normally the case. And if you have people inside of your workplace that are doing that on purpose, well, then you really have an HR problem. You don't have an employee problem. You have an HR problem because you're hiring the wrong people. So that's the stuff to think about. And we get so confused on, well, we'll just use the name Bob for the using the sake of the name Bob. Bob did this on purpose. Bob needs to be terminated. I don't think Bob woke up that morning with the intent of doing something wrong on purpose. It's just not how people do stuff. It's just not how that works. And then kind of going back just a tad for a moment, I will tell you, within the 3 books, they kind of go off on their own tangents at times. And some people go, well, this is not a true safety book. Okay, I can take that. And some people go, well, it's not a true systems book. Okay, I can take that too. And it's not a true biography. Well, I can take that too. I kind of wanted to combine the best of everything and mix them together. And I wanted to give you standpoints of Philip K. Dick. And people will go, well, isn't that a science fiction writer? Well, he is. But when you start reading some of his stuff, you start questioning, was he really a science fiction writer or a guy that could see the future? Because it's kind of weird on how it works. And then if you kind of read some of the stuff of Thomas Campbell and look at some of the Philip K. Dick stuff, it's weird on how they have a small parallel together in regards of it. But then I didn't want to have a monster book. I didn't want to have a book where you had to read beginning to end to get the concepts. What I wanted to do is I wanted you to take a look at this book and go, I can pick and choose my journey. I don't want to have to read it page 1 to the end. I can go, this is what I'm interested in. I can read a chapter listing and then jump to that section and then jump around to whatever you have going on at that time, opposed to it just being one of these books where you go, oh my God, just get to the point and stop repeating the same thing over and over again. And I will tell you, and I'll use the word here, I caught a lot of shit at the very beginning of this because I said BBS was okay. And I said HOP was okay. And you can intermingle those worlds together. And a lot of people have difficulty with that because they believe it's all or nothing. And I'm not one of those believers of that. I think that without Geller, I wouldn't have got to X-Part. And that's kind of what led me to Todd Conklin's work. And without Scott Geller's BBS work, there would have been no way that I would ever looked at the systems the way that I did.
Yeah. And people are constantly with BBS and HOP as Crips in the Blood, you know, throwing up their sets. Like, no, actually, I think I've teached the BBS program as a contract instructor for Alliance Safety Council with the COS and COSM. I actually wrote the new updated COS program, but the previous stuff I didn't write. But I always tell my students that with BBS, if you're not doing it right, it's going to end up being where you're lecturing people. You got to think of the behavior. Yes, it's a component of the full system of what's happening with the worker, their behavior. But now you got to figure out, why did this person do what they did at the time they did it for the reason they did it? We need context. So you're monitoring the behavior, but you also need to figure out in your coaching, you know, what is the antecedent to that behavior and what was the past consequences. And if you don't understand that, you're not coaching, you're preaching. And if you don't understand that people starts with a thought or a trigger thought behavior, you know, something triggered that thought that says, all right, right now in this moment, I'm going to do something that I probably might get hurt. It's going to increase risk, but I'm going to do that because something triggered that person to have that thought. And then they execute with the behavior. And coaching should try to figure out what was trigger. What was the thing that was the antecedent before this behavior? And that's where I think BBS programs, as they stand, they end up looking at someone bending at the waist and not at the knees and chastising them for that. And then they start giving them a whole diatribe of, do you know for every inch from the focal point that you're going to end up adding X amount of pounds to your back? And No one cares about that. It's like, you want to find out why this person did this, and very easily could be, of course I'm not going to bend my knees because look at this bar in front of my knees. I'm going to hit my knees every time. You know, something like that. That's the stuff that I found in your book that is like eye-opening, if you would, but affirming to me. So thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome, but I kind of looked at it from the standpoint that you kind of had to look at all of the things. I mean, there are some stuff about BBS that I still like. There are some stuff about Hop that I like. There are some stuff about BBS that I don't like. Guess what? This might be surprising to some, but there are some stuff in Hop that I don't like. It's just kind of the way that it goes. And I looked at the whole thing that regardless of you being in a system, you being in however you want to look at it, a construct, so on, this still has an impact on the end user, the person actually going through the experience. And I started taking a look of how does that impact them mentally. And I decided to take a dive into what some subject matters people do not want to talk about is this leads to depression. This leads to suicide. This leads to acts that people do not want to talk about. But we're looking at construction. We're looking at these workplaces that people are having high suicide rates because of what's going on. And we'll say the mental disturbance that we put people through. Because listen, if I'm going to work every day and some jackass is yelling at me the whole time about I'm not doing this, I'm not following X rule, I don't care how strong you are, it's going to bother you to some extent. And I'm going to tell you this, regardless of what you have going on, it is okay to go to therapy. It is okay to say that you're not okay. And a lot of people have a hard time with that. I remember when I was a kid, and I'm not picking on my father here, but it was more along the lines of, you know, just deal with the shit and move forward. It's like, suck it up and move forward. I mean, and I always looked at it and I kind of look back now and going, that was how he was brought up. And I'm not saying that it's wrong, but I look at it and go, but I think things have changed since then. And I remember him quoting this quite often to me. Suicide, the permanent answer for a temporary problem. It was something that he would tell me quite often. Not that I was thinking about actually committing suicide or anything like that, but I kept on looking at it and going, why does he use that terminology? Mm-hmm. And it bothered me because I would go, I think it should be okay for people to talk about how they feel about things. And I will tell you, I remember the first time that I heard about somebody taking a mental health day. I was like, what? Like, what is that? And I remember talking to my manager at the time because I was still in Florida and he oversaw part of California. And that was something that California started doing. And I was like, that doesn't sound even remotely close to being normal. But then as I started looking at it and I go, yeah, people need sometimes to take a break from the things that are going on. They need to evaluate what's exactly happening inside of their life. And I would love to say that the moment I get to work, I leave my personal life at the door and vice versa. That is not what occurs. And these things will bother me regardless of what's going on. Like I had a scenario during the conference that there was something that was bothering me that had nothing related to what I was doing at the time, but I couldn't get it out of my mind. And this is stuff that I've done enough work to that I can go, oh, okay, I can kind of manage this, but I couldn't get it out of my head. And I look at it from the point of, why can't we have these conversations? Why can't we have these conversations of, go focus on your well-being and let's manage everything else as needs to go, opposed to not talking about it whatsoever. And I know that you recently, when you reached out to me about doing this, you said that, you know, you had some conversations about the story that I have inside of one of the books about Igor. And I will tell you, the person's name is not Igor, but I felt that it, you know, would not be correct for me to use the person's name on exactly who it was. But I looked at it from the standpoint and I go, that particular story is kind of what happens a lot of times. It's the story of, you know, there's something off with someone and we're not sure what's going on, but we kind of catch it, but we don't say anything. And the person tries to keep to themselves for no one else to ask what's going on. Now, Igor was in the military. Igor would talk about being in the military only if you brought it up to him. It wasn't something that he went out there and talked about. But things got so bad for him that he just vanished one day. And I'm not talking like vanished that he's no longer here, but he vanished that nobody was sure what was going on with him. Now, since then, he has moved somewhere else things have improved for him since then, but it was one of those things that Igor was a guy you could always count on, and it was just one of those momentary blips that he wasn't there, and people started realizing what the heck was going on. It was never coming about and asking the question of what is going on with Igor all the time, because you knew that he was always going to be consistent. And the moment that that changed, that's when questions started coming about. Not before,
yeah,
but it was after.
And they didn't see the quiet suffering, if you would.
Right.
Then all of a sudden the questions came in, and I can't remember, was it Marlene in your story in that chapter that finally said, hey, what's going on? And no one's asking for the true thing.
Right. And I'll put it to you this way. The names, I changed them on purpose. But the people that were involved with these stories, or even the people that were at these organizations, they know exactly who I'm talking about. They know. I've had a couple of people reach out and go, you're talking about this. And I was like, yep. Yeah. But I just didn't think that it was the right thing to use people's real names. But that was my decision. Not that I was worried about being sued or anything like along those lines, but these are private matters that if those people want to discuss it, I think it's up to them to discuss it from a public standpoint. I was more along the lines that I wanted to talk about the stories about exactly what was going on.
Yeah, no, and for those of you that aren't aware, construction suicide, and this is Suicide Prevention Month. It's the time of this recording in 2025. It's at an epidemic level in the U.S., and just looking at the National Alliance of Mental Illness website, and it says 1 in 20 U.S. adults, 5%, have serious thoughts of suicide each year. About one person dies by suicide in the U.S. every 11 minutes. Isn't that insane?
That's insane.
And 79% of that die by suicide or in the U.S. are males. So, again, it's just epidemic levels in construction, but it's truly out there in this society. And honestly, we know construction is just tough because you have less workers for still even more projects. And then when you have those male-dominated groups and you're trying to put in people with different views, or, you know, imagine someone who wants to be called they, them in a construction site, you know, what kind of bullying they're going to get,
right.
You know, that's the realness of, you know, workplace and how people, sure, we used to say, you leave your problem at the gate, don't bring that here. You can't do that anymore because the problem's in the gate. And the people that you're dealing with and the construct of safety that tells you, you know, you're wrong, even though you made a decision that was going to reduce risk, but you didn't fill out a form and now you get written up, you know, you're just going to comply next time. And then the risk is still there. And you're going to feel bad about it. And then that's going to end up hurting your mental health state. It's just a vicious cycle.
I mean, it's a terrible vicious cycle overall, especially when you give those numbers every 11 minutes. And think about that. I'm writing you up, or as some companies use, a PIP, a performance improvement plan. Do you understand what kind of cluster you just caused by putting somebody on a performance improvement plan? Because you think that you're doing something with the employee, with the worker, with the team member, but you have now just put yourself, meaning the manager or the supervisor, through a cluster of things that you're going to have to do. Because guess what? Besides that you just put this person on there, now you have to verify everything that's going on with that person. So you have to verify that the team members have not changed around him or her. You have to verify that nothing has really gone total left, total right in regards of what's happening. You have to make sure that you are supervising, and then the determination of the other side is the length of the performance improvement program on how long it's going to last. So how long are you going to be observing this person? So now you're putting this person inside of a microscope. So you have just added a ton more work to your plate by putting them on a performance improvement plan, not realizing, was it something that the system caused, or was it something that, quote unquote, the employee was doing?
Yeah, and then the automatic blame, and not only that, but now the peer group is going to notice that, oh, Billy got in trouble. What did he do? And, you know, that's going to be...
We are taking a break to share a message with you. If you're like me, you've probably heard the buzz about AI and wondered, can I trust it with my data? Will it undermine human judgment? Those are valid questions. That's exactly why Hopco Pilot is built the way it is. Hopco Pilot agents operate on Microsoft Copilot. Microsoft 365 Copilot protects your organizational data, user prompts, and responses. Your data is stored securely and remains within trusted boundaries. In Hopco Pilot, ethics and people stay at the center. Use the Work Design and Error Trap Analysis Agent to find risky ambiguities without pointing fingers. Use the 4Ds or 4Ls Worker Insights Agent to bring out what the frontline sees. When an incident occurs, the Event Learning Storyboard Agent helps you learn with fairness and clarity. If you've doubted AI, that's okay. But imagine an AI that amplifies human wisdom, never replacing it, where your values guide every decision, and where your data is protected. That's what Hopco Pilot offers. So here's what you can do now. Go to hopcopilot.com, see those agents in action. Try the free Event Learning Storyboard or schedule a conversation about bringing the full platform into your work. Let's create safer, smarter change. Together, Hopco Pilot. Where people lead, AI supports, trust follows. Now back to the podcast.
You know, its own part of hazing, if you would. And all that just comes right back to, you know, this individual is dealing with all this stress. They're expected to bottle it up. And when they can't bottle it up, you get your substance abuse issues. You got your issues related to acting out at work. You got your people who honestly will be like your ego and turn inward and just, you know, check out. And that all increases risk. And when risk goes up, we know that in our safety world, that then you have your issues, or at least a higher possibility of it. It's insidious. And then to boot, the safety people and all of us, we're drawn to this field a lot because of our empathy. So I feel like for us, and you talk about it in the book, about burnout, I think safety officers are starting to get burnt out at an alarming rate as well. I don't see the numbers, but ISO 45003 tells us that management's got to step up and actually do have a system to figure out what's going on with their employees, or else, you know, they're not going to end up having a organization that is going to be sustainable when it comes to workplace and workers. And that's big topic, and you covered it in the book, and I know you gave your in chapter 106 with the semicolon chapter. That was just really cool. I mean, I play that back for my class, and they open up to me, and I tell the class when we first get started, this is a safe place, and I really. And I'm grateful for you writing that chapter, because it has truly opened up a lot of conversation with my class. And I let them listen to the chapter, the full chapter in its entirety. And then I stop teaching and I say, I truly have stirred things in some of you. I know I have. And I mute myself. And then I say, please go ahead. And I mute myself. And you would be amazed at how many students feel open and feel like a safe place. And your chapter has opened that up for us. And I thank you for it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. But I've always looked at it that if you're going to build the comfortable space to be able to have the discussion, you have to be willing to give them the opportunity. And sometimes during things that I'm teaching or things that I'm doing, I'll take a pause or I'll mention something about this. And I constantly talk about To Write Love on Our Arms. And believe me, I'm not tied into them financially or any way, shape, or form. So I never want anybody to ever be confused. But I think that a lot of the stuff that they do is so important in regards to what they talk about. And I think that they have a lot of great stuff on their website, and that's TWLOHA.com. And they just have so much great information. And I have this tattoo on the side of my head, and it's the only tattoo that I have on my head. and it's really right next to my ear, where it's a heart and it's the semicolon. And I want people to be aware that there is love, and there are times that you just need to take a moment before you make the next step. And listen, these are not easy thoughts. These are heavy ideas, heavy decisions on when people are thinking, hey, I'm done. I don't want anything else to do with this life. And can you talk for a moment? And I have put it in a place where I can't hide it. I put it in a place where at any point, people that know what that means, that they can come up and talk to me, regardless of what I'm doing. I want them to be aware this is a portion of whatever is going on. We drop what we're doing to have this conversation because it's that important. And not to get too, you know, far on a tangent, but You who are listening to this are the most important person on the planet. And listen, that can be your perspective. There are times in life that things are not great. There are times in life that things are good, but regardless of what's going on, take a moment before you do anything and understand your decisions. Understand what's going on, because I look at it from the standpoint is that your life is so important. Just imagine the amount of people that you impact on a daily basis, the amount of people that you impact by if anything were to happen to you. Now, a lot of times when you're going through a lot of these thoughts, that's not what you're thinking at the moment. But think about it. It's okay not to be okay. And sometimes you just have to go through the journey of understanding of, okay, things are not good today, but what happens if I take one thing at a time? And it can be simple things. Take a long shower. Play some music that you like. Call someone you haven't talked to in quite some time. Even send them a text. I know calling is a little bit difficult for some. I get it. But Even just text someone. Even if you're just reading a book, whatever it takes just for a moment, just to take that moment to appreciate what you have. And I'm not saying that it's easy, but you have to almost retrain your brain on how to look at some of these things. I always like to use the example of think about a time that you were in an argument with someone in particular, and how the more you thought about the argument, the worse that argument got into your brain in regards to how you were thinking about it. Think about a moment that you were happy, and how the more you think about that happy moment, the happier you get, even though that might have not been what happened in that moment. That's how your brain works. So sometimes things are not as bad as they look, and sometimes things are not as great as they look. Just take a moment and think about it before you make that next decision.
Yeah, that's great. And honestly, you're right with how the brain works. And for some of us here, you know, that's another bunch of theories about how the brain works. But you could truly retrain your brain. First, you have to arrest the way that you tell your story, the things that you say over and over and over again. That's the story that you tell. So you have to catch it first. And if you get yourself in a mood, what have you been telling yourself? Because your mind is reliving something. So as your mind is reliving whatever that is, then that is going to end up leading you to feel like you're in a state that you can't get out of. So once you catch it, first it'll probably be your breathing. You'll notice that you stop breathing. Take that breath. And then probably you're going to see it in your heart too. So your heart's not going to, it's going to be palpitating a little bit more. So that means you got to move. It's nowhere else for that body chemistry to go. So it's going to go to your heart. So once you start moving, then that's going to help change your state of mind. And then you have to reprogram your brain. Tell yourself something that's good. Tell yourself, you know, go hug on the kids. Whatever you need to do to get some oxytocin release, that's going to help you out quite a bit. Look at us. We're getting into the doctor stuff.
I always look at this that it's so important just to have the safe space. It's always important just to be able to have the discussion. And listen, I know that a lot of people don't want to talk about this subject in person. They don't want to have this discussion, but like I say, if you go to that website to write love on her arms and just click on the section that says self-care, if you just did that, there's so many different things that are there that that you can just look at and just know that you're worthy, know that you're enough, and know that you belong here. Regardless of what your mind is telling you, these are the things that you need to look at. And if you just go through that website, there's so many different steps on things that you can do. And if you kind of realize that these are mental models that you go through, if you kind of already know about this, it makes it a lot easier. There's even an app on their website that you can download that's just for self-help. It is just something to look at and understand. A lot of the services that are on their website are free. You don't have to pay for anything. There's not a membership. It's not a subscription service. It's just for you to be aware that people are there and available for you.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Wow. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also want to get you on another topic, and I have no idea what's happening to my mic, all everybody. I have no idea, and I have to just let it go, but I'll let you guys know I hear it too. But the other topic that I was going to talk to you about was music. Mm-hmm. You got a lot of music in your Danzig and Michelle. I can't remember her last name.
Michelle Joy Lewis from a band called Cannons.
Joy Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So how did that influence you? The music in itself.
Wow. We can be here all day with this one because listen, I jokingly say this to people, and I've always said this to be kind of sarcastic, saying that music is my mistress. It has always been there for me, blah, blah, blah. But that's just me being kind of a punk as I say it. But I've always been in tune with music. I've always enjoyed the different kind of music that's out there, some more than others, of course. But I looked at it and I was watching an older interview with Michael Jackson in particular, where he talked about how music is a mantra. And I thought it was interesting giving his aspect of it. And I was like, wow, if you really think about it, you're really kind of saying somebody else's words over and over again. And you're kind of programming yourself, as one may say, in regards of repeating on what somebody else is saying. And it was odd because I was listening just to some music and there's this artist by the name of Dua Lipa, which some people are familiar with, some people are not. And she was supposedly going to be releasing a newer album at the time that was supposed to be a 70s style music album. So I started looking around and I said, let me find what 70s music sounds like, even though I had a pretty good idea. But I was like, let me take a look. And I started finding a lot of bands with synthesizers. And I was watching, and I tend to play YouTube, and I'm not going to brand specific, but I just plan to play a lot of YouTube music, and sometimes it gives you the video, sometimes it gives you the song. And there was a song that came on, and it was by this band called Cannons, that they're out of Venice Beach, California. And the lady started singing this song called Bad Dreams. And the moment she started singing, it just caught me. I didn't know what was going on. It was like I felt something different than I had felt before in regards of how she looked, how the voice was, how the music played. And it just kind of, it was mesmerizing for a moment. I remember pausing and just going, what is going on? And ever since then, I was like wanting to find out everything possible about that band. Wow. In regards to what was going on. And I will tell you that I have been a Glenn Danzig fan, and that's the guy that used to be in a band called The Misfits, and then he was in a band called Samhain, and now he has his own band called Danzig. He's had it since like 1987, 1988, give or take. And I have listened to that band, and everything that Danzig was heavy music-wise, this Cannons band was entirely different. And it's the polar opposite, but it kind of opened something in my mind that was entirely different, that kind of let me see what I would say almost like the softer side of life. And when I kind of put both of those musics together, it kind of was the harsh and the soft. And I was like, I don't ever think that I would have ever imagined myself listening to something along those lines. And not that it's bad. I think that the Cannon music is great, especially if you like old collective style music where they really give some throwbacks to the older 70s and 80s music in regards of what on what the band does. It is led by this young lady by the name of Michelle Joy Lewis. Funny enough, I found out a while ago that she was actually originally from Florida and then moved to California. It was interesting to see. And then my wife has a friend, which I thought this was the one that kind of really threw me off, that her brother used to be her boyfriend for this Michelle Joy Lewis person. I was like, how small is this world? When it was all set and done, and like they live in the neighborhood like next to us, and I was like, wow, this is a very small world. And the only reason that it came up in conversation was because we were going to go see the band live, and I had the opportunity to meet the band, and it was quite fantastic. And it's interesting because it kind of brought my world together in regards of music. And I go into very specific weird stuff that I've done tattoo-wise ever since listening to their music. But that was a choice for me because, to me, their music resonated so much and I thought it was important for the journey that I'm on.
Yeah, that's the first I've heard about you. I guess the choice, the meeting or knowing someone that knew her, because I guess on the Soundwise page, I did see your picture with her in the in that chapter, and then your picture with Danzig too. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, and I've had some very interesting aspects in regards of timelines working out in regards to that. I met Danzig many, 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 many years ago. And then the Michelle Joy Lewis stuff, this happened probably within the last year, a little over a year at this particular point. But it was one of those things that it's kind of weird when you start trying to explain tattoos to people, where I was like, I have this idea of what I want to do, but understand it doesn't mean probably what other people think that it means. It was just one of those things that I have a pretty large chess piece, which I would have never thought in my life that I would have had, but it blended both of my worlds together on how I look at it. And it kind of gave me some information to me, of course, and how the world can blend when you, especially if you read the Philip K. Dick book called The Exorcesis, which is kind of odd because there's a lot of writing from Philip K. Dick, but I don't really think that he ever meant it to be a book that was going to be open to the world to see. But it kind of explained a lot more to me as I blended the world together in regards of music. And I know that we talk about binaural beats from time to time, but to me, that is my version of the harsh and of the soft and how those two things can blend together. And that is my versionality to some extent of a binaural beat on where they could get me places mentally, because on how those synthesizers work, that wouldn't probably make a lot of sense to a lot of people.
No, man. And I was actually going to bring up the binaural stuff. And first of all, what kind of tattoo budget do you have? You're going hog wild.
Well, that's the funny part, because I've had tattoos, and I'm not going to say that I didn't. But over the last, I want to say the last 2 years, maybe 3 years, I have probably went hog wild in regards to tattoos. But to me, I always wanted to look back. And when I have those moments of doubt, I wanted to look at the journey. And it's different for everyone, or maybe I really just liked a lot of stickers when I was a kid. I can't figure out which one it is. But it was looking at my arms and looking at this, even though you might see the tattoos in passing, they might not mean anything to you. But to me, it's part of my story. It's part of the story of where I've gotten to. And believe me, if I walk into a room and there's a whole bunch of quote unquote safety professionals, I do not blend in with the rest of them because of how I appear. But I still have a story. My story is that you can glance on it and take a look, and it might not mean anything to you, but we can sit there and have a large conversation, or a long conversation, better saying, in regards of what it means and what was that particular part of the journey to me.
Wow. And I just noticed it most recently with your pictures. Obviously, we haven't seen each other in a little while, except for when I was back in Florida over the spring. But honestly, I was like, man, those are so cool. And I've only got my two little tattoos and I'm keep thinking I'm going to get another one. I had Chat draw up something for me and I told it I wanted on my left calf and it came back with an image with a guy with three legs. I was like, yeah, go rest, AI. You worked yourself too hard.
Well, that's the thing a lot with AI is that if you ask it to generate stuff for you, you have to be very specific on to give it the correct amount of limbs. I learned that many, many moons ago. I shouldn't say many moons ago, probably within the last 2 years, that you have to be very specific. But when I go through the whole tattoo journey, I have to tell you one of the most important tattoos that I have, it's the one that I have on my wedding finger. And a lot of people go, well, why would you put that there? Because my ring finger, I have the question mark that's designed very similar to how the Riddler from the Batman movie was, that came out about 4 or 5 years ago at this point. And I wanted people to look at it and ask the question. Number one, like, are you married? Well, that's fine. That's, you can ask me that question. But I wanted you to look and go, question everything. That tattoo right there has probably started more conversations than any other tattoo that I have. I mean, the one that's next to my ear is for people to know that if there has been moments of doubt, but you can start a conversation with me. But any story that I've ever given, there is more that are driven towards the question mark tattoo, because you don't have to know anything about me to start the conversation of what does that mean.
No, that's a good one. And I like the question everything, because honestly, part of finding the signal, and then when you transmit your own signal, it starts with that questioning, trying to figure out, all right, they're telling me that this is supposed to make the worker safe. I'm seeing that the workers are adapting in the field. What's true? And when you start questioning those things, then I do have to do a quick sidebar. One of the things that you mentioned in the book was when the system notices that you've seen it and then it adapts to you. And now all of a sudden, the things that you think or you were saying was really unique and you're bringing attention to some situations, all of a sudden becomes some billboard logo or some sort of something that the system then flips back around and throws it into your face that, oh yeah, that's a great idea, but let's also do this. And, that whole phenomenon of, you know, all of a sudden your good thought becomes a slogan and a campaign for a safety incentive program, and then it loses all value. That's also the system protecting itself, if you would.
I mean, just think about it for a moment, just bringing that up. Think about the bastardization that has occurred recently with human organizational performance. There are so many other people that want to put their hooks on it and rebrand it into something else that it was never meant to be in the first place. And it happens so frequently that our systems want to adjust to the same old thing that they used to be. Like, I remember walking into an organization and them saying, can you tell me more about the HOP program? And I'm like, what? And it's not a program. And listen, people are going to backslide regardless of them hearing about a concept or not. That's kind of expected. But I look at it from the standpoint of, we want that silver bullet thing. And I know that you and I always have the conversation regardless of when we have recording about the silver bullet. But people think that there's this magic bullet, the silver bullet is going to solve everything. There's no such thing. And we try to adjust these systems to how we ran our BBS programs. And that's where we run into a lot of issues, because that's not going to solve anything. I am not saying that BBS is bad. Please understand that. But if we try to run everything new and try to have a paradigm shift by going backwards, I don't think that that's going to get us to the place that we're trying to get to that's ahead of us.
Yeah, and I guess it goes back to Heinrich's 85 to 95% of all accidents, human error, but no one knowing that the data was bogus.
Right.
And not because of what he wanted it to be bogus. It's just because people lied to him. They didn't have the field to tell him what was the cause of the accident. So what he found out is 85 to 95% of all supervisors blame their employees when the insurance guy talks to them. That's Heinrich's data.
Very true. Very true.
Yes. So generally, seeing everybody, you know, going with BBS, they're like, oh, well, it's natural. If I, you know, control the worker, then I'm good. And I know when I had Todd on my show, you know, 3 years ago, when he first did the book of Do Safety Differently, you know, honestly, that was one of the things that I really enjoyed that that book brought out and just said, hey, let's now introduce something new. Let's test it first. Let's do a control group and let's see, you know, what are the things that truly increase risk. And it may not be just behavior, but it may be something else. Let's see if we could, you know, delete a form or something. If the workers are pencil whipping it anyway, let's delete the form. The behavior is them pencil whipping. You could do a behavior analysis, but why? Why are they doing that? And is the form even good? Let's test that. And I've been trying to teach my students that too as well. And many of them are really resistant, especially the site safety people who that's their job. They have to like run the safety department during a turnaround and they're on pretty much, you know, they're the ones who are writing people up. They have to rule with an iron fist and all the rules apply to everybody because you have, you know, seven or so contractors on this one site for this one time frame and they have that craziness going on. They don't think about systems in the same way as someone who does the same job over and over again with just the same amount of people. That's probably my biggest challenge is the site safety people who have that unique perspective of having to do turnarounds and having all these subcontractors. I know they need to do something to hold workers accountable, and that's one of the chapters in your book is the HOP word, accountability being one of the misunderstood words in HOP. But the site safety people, I kind of feel for them, and also the construction roofers. I feel for them too, because honestly, they're put in a position by management, and their management don't care, truly. And you could tell by the OSHA numbers. OSHA cites roofers for not having fall protection to the a few million dollars each year, and they don't care. When's the last time anyone listening to this saw a roofer in the U.S. with fall protection? Mm-hmm. I'll give you a minute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't even tell you. And of course, being in Florida, you see people getting their roof replaced pretty frequently around here. And I can't even tell you when the last time that I had seen something along those lines.
Yeah. So how do they change a system when management is you know, just bent on getting work done and that's it? And there is OSHA, I just went through their budget, and I'm that kind of geek, but OSHA's budget is truly incentivizing right now for OSHA not to do inspections as much. They're going to do their normal inspections, and mostly it's going to be when people have to self-report, but they're reducing inspection money and inspection time, so that means the bad actors are going to go nuts the next few years. And how do you get those safety officers to effectively change the system if the stacks against them, however that analogy works?
Right.
The cards are stacked against them. Yeah, that one.
That's it. That's analogy. It.
So what's some tips on those people?
Oh, my God.
What do they do?
Well, I mean, let's just kind of be realistic. The worst place to be inside of an organization, as you know and I know, is middle management, because you're kind of stuck. You're stuck in a weird spot because you have to appease to the people at the top, but you also have to appease to the people that are actually doing the work. And it's kind of it's kind of a weird spot to be in. And that's if you kind of really look at what you were just saying, that's what we're talking about, because how do you make the best of both worlds? And did you just nail your head? It sounded like that. because you have to make the best of both worlds. Because how do you appease to the people that are essentially writing your check, but how do you make sure that the people that are doing the work are making sure that they're taken care of? And that's always that weird conundrum of that's that weird balance. It's the weird balance of I need to get this over the line, but also at the same time, too, I need to make sure that people are not upset in regards to what's being done. How do you make them safe and compliant by also making a profit margin to an extent? It's a weird conundrum. I wish that I could give you an answer on how this would work, but realistically, we have to change the way that we do work and the way that we look at work, for that's going to be the only way that it will ever be able to change.
Yeah, that's true. I guess what I tell people is truly on a micro level, you just do what's in your control. And eventually the owners are going to say, hey, hold on, we hadn't had an incident in so long, and now we could bid for another job because our experience modification rate has gone below this level. How do we do that? And then your time to shine comes into, all right, this is how we've been reducing risk on the micro level with me going around the workplace. On the macro level, how you could support me is this. And that's usually how I tell them, just deal with what's in your control first. And if they put too much, the bosses put too much pressure on you to cut corners and all that stuff, that's a different story altogether. That may be a company you don't want to work for. But usually our safety side, we've got so much empathy that we have guilt, and we feel like if I leave these workers, then who's going to protect them and take care of them? Mm-hmm. And that's the other side too, because then you got guilt that the system is keeping you down, and then you end up changing and adapting to the system and not really speaking your truth. And then it gets reinforced, the system of high risk, it gets reinforced. And again, it goes into that insane cycle, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of the funny part about the whole thing is that what do you really do? Because at no point is there a really good answer to this. It's like, if you leave, what are you doing to the people that you left behind? And if you stay, what exactly are you doing to move everything forward? It's quite a conundrum.
Yeah, it is. And honestly, it's going to be case by case, and everyone's going to have to think of, again, what can I control? And honestly, if it comes to that point and it's time to leave, you're not leaving the workers per se. Yes, you're going to be going to a different job, but at that point, just self-preservation takes precedent over everything else. It becomes where, just like in the plane that's going down, you got to put your own oxygen mask on first and then get the kids, right? Now, so mm-hmm. the idea here is if the organization is not going to change, they're not ready yet. They haven't had their incident that they need to be ready yet. They haven't incident hopefully isn't going to lead to a fatality, but some of these incidents might just be they just can't get that bid that they've been going for, and they get turned down and they can't go to the bid package, and then all of a sudden they start thinking, okay, what can we do to get better? And then they're ready. You may not be there for that, but you can't force a change on a macro level. So if your micro level isn't working anymore, you got to take care of yourself. And that's guilt-free. You take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, all right. Our Call Me system that you so you guys don't know, we're using Call Me by Roadcast. Told me that I've gone my over my time and I extended it, so I don't know if it's going to cut us off. So I want you to give everyone a proper goodbye so that they know how to reach you.
Okay, yeah. If you want to find out more about what we have going on here at Safety FM, all you have to do is go to safetyfm.com. As Sheldon already warned you, the sound will start playing the moment you get over there, depending on how everything's worked out. But would love to for you to take a listen to the different shows that we have on. This show will be available on there from Mr. Sheldon Primus himself, of course, and you can find all the different stuff that we have at safetyfm.com.
Wow, it seems like you've done this before.
A couple times.
Oh, my friend, thank you so much for being part of the show, and thank you so much for just listening to your intuition and writing this series of books that is going to change safety, and it's my mission to get this out. So honestly, as much as I can, I'm sharing it with all of my students. I'm going to share it with my audience, and truly what you've gifted us with this trilogy. So thank you so much for being part of the show and giving us this trilogy.
Thank you, Sheldon.
That's a wrap for today's safety show. Remember, safety isn't just about hard hats and caution signs. It's about business smarts, too. Thanks for joining us on the Safety Consultant Show with Sheldon Primus. Until next time, stay safe, stay savvy, and keep consulting like a boss. Go get 'em. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast or broadcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within the past hour, only examples. It should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the positions of the company. No part of this podcast or broadcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast or broadcast, Sheldon Primus.
This episode has been powered by Safety FM.